Hi, Vikram.
Hi, Rachel.
Hello, plant people. I'm Rachel, and this is In the Grow.
I'm still Vikram, and I agree. It is In the Grow.
No one was doubting that it's still you, Vikram.
Well, stuff happens.
Today, we're doing more basics. That's right, basics, because we're basic. I'm kidding. We're like both anything but, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's ever described either of us as basic.
No, I don't think that's true at all.
Yeah. Anyway, that's enough of us. Let's talk about plants. Specifically, amending your soil and picking cool weather crops to get in before your warm season garden. That's words. Those are the words.
Those were words. I can confirm. Yeah. So, as we're getting into the late winter, I say that it's like midwinter. We're like theoretically right in the heart of winter.
Yeah. But it and also theoretically, it's already spring because a groundhog told us it was.
Yeah.
Is.
I don't know why we let psychic rodents.
It's not that. I actually looked it up because remember last time I was thinking, why do we do this?
Yeah, no.
How do we know if it sees it? So apparently, according to how it's supposed to work, is that if it supposedly sees its shadow, a groundhog, by the way.
Yeah, no, right.
If it sees its shadow, it goes back in its burrow. And if it doesn't and stays out in the sun, that means that it's spring. So that's what they mean by it seeing its shadow is I don't know. If it sees it, it will supposedly go back in its burrow to stay warm.
Okay. What if someone just like scares it?
I don't know.
What if there's just like a
I'm
scary
just saying,
guy?
I looked up a little bit. I'm not an expert.
Punxsutawney Phil?
No, Punxsutawney.
What did I say? Punxsutawney?
You said punk or something like that. But
say it again.
Punxsutawney.
Punxsutawney Phil.
Yes.
Okay. This has nothing to do with anything, but there's people on the internet right now writing a musical, like collaboratively writing a musical about this immortal groundhog. What are they called?
Yeah, groundhogs.
Groundhog, yeah.
AKA also a woodchuck. Apparently they're the same thing.
Interesting. So writing a musical collaboratively about Phil, the immortal groundhog, and his spurned groundhog wife who was... The internet's weird, right? Like social media. Anyway.
You know what? I'm kind of bummed out you just told me that and that we just told a bunch of people that. I mean, it's cool to collaboratively write a musical.
Now you have to know about it.
I don't know. Yeah.
Okay. So, yes.
Plants.
At this time of year when there's groundhogs and it's sort of warming up or whatever, but it's maybe not supposed to be, we need to start prepping our beds, prepping our soil, getting ready for spring. Because what's going to be weird this year, I think, and we've talked about this a little bit over the past few episodes, is that it's warmish right now, the past few weeks.
I would argue not ish. It is warm.
It's warm. I'm pretty sure today as we record this, it's 65 degrees inside.
It's not hot, but it is warm.
But it's warm. And plants are sweet. It's spring. They've had enough chilling probably, and they've had the day length is getting to be appropriate. And they're probably trying to start waking up. And things in the soil are starting to wake up. But then March is going to roll around, and I'm sure we're going to get a big cold snap at some point. We're not done. There's no way we're done.
But it's still time to get ready for spring, which means amending your soil now.
Right.
So that you have something to do while it's still weird and in flux outside.
Yeah, and...
We're both trying
doing so good the past couple of weeks. I'm going to stop touching this. Okay. Also, I think another big benefit of amending your soil right now and adding mulch and doing all those kinds of things...
Fertilizing if you need to.
Yeah, if necessary, is that then even if we do get a cold snap, your soil's at least prepped. But if we don't, then you're kind of ready to go, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to address this later when you could just be going out and planting and getting into the season.
Most likely, if you've been gardening, your soil is probably good.
Yeah,
for the most part. I would argue. But, if you're the kind of person that gets some bagged soil every year and adds that in as a top dressing, you're probably good. But if you're, as you've told us before, if you just moved to a new house or maybe you've never done a garden or maybe you're just doing some things in planters or pots, you're going to want to have good soil. And if you're doing planters and pots and you think you're just going to take dirt straight out of your yard or somewhere random.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, you're going to need to add stuff to that.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
you're going to need to curate your soil.
That's a good way to put that.
Because it's not ready just as is, unless you want it to be a prairie landscape of just grass tufts and yuccas.
Which, some people are into that.
Yeah.
And if you're into that, like, good for you. I'm happy you are. And same. And two, like, I think another way to think about this, too, is some people will garden aggressively.
Aggressively.
But, you know, some people, like, grow the same thing over and over and over again, right? In the same spot.
But that's not good. You got to rotate those crops.
You do. And if you're not, for whatever reason, you know, some places, some folks have limited space. And so maybe you only like growing tomatoes, right? And you've got a limited space to do it. And that's fine. Like, if you want to grow tomatoes every year in the same pot or the same year, okay. But you have to realize that after 2 or 3 years, like, that soil is super depleted and tired.
I think that's a good, what you're saying is a good argument for companion planting, so that possibly, you know, if you're growing a sunflower or something that tends to leach nitrogen out really well, like strongly, strong nitrogen feeder, you may want to plant some beans down at the bottom of it or something that's going to deposit what that's taking out, you know, just so things stay balanced and you're not having to do this maybe like a massive crop rotation or amendment to your soil because you're letting nature do nature.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. I think three sisters plantings or companion plantings or however you want to cut that.
I did it now. I kicked it. My bad.
At least there's not a trash can in front of me for me to punt across the room.
But, you know, I don't think companion planting, it doesn't just have to be three sisters.
No.
We've read some things about planting certain herbs or certain vegetables together because they have a copacetic relationship, like how they could help each other.
Yeah, absolutely. So whatever you're, you know, planting together, I think that's a good idea. And, you know, it mines different resources. It adds different resources back. But if you've gotten to the place, and I think the point I'm thinking about is that if you've gotten to a place where you haven't done that, you know, you haven't been really necessarily taking care of your soil. And I think people don't realize sometimes that they need to, especially new gardeners. It's like, oh, I'll just put the plant in the ground, the soil.
Totally.
So like, it doesn't.
I definitely had that thought, I think, the first time I ever tried to plant something. And like, then you're like,
it's just dirt. I just put it in the dirt, right?
And you're like, why is it just like water logging? And then it's all that clay if you haven't amended the soil. Like, I just lived in a yard that had not been ever grown in because it was like a not super nice duplex.
Sure.
And I just put some sunflowers out there. And of course, a sunflower is probably still going to grow. But I did end up putting some topsoil out there from a bag that really made help things out. And, you know, because that gets incorporated in. But at first, it was just like anytime I'd water it, it's like wet sand almost.
Yeah, sure.
You know how it just like soaks everything up and then it becomes compacted.
Yes.
And that can like waterlog it. And that's not good for your plants. And that's why you would add mulch or something. Like you've said, I know mulch keeps water in, but it also makes this kind of separation. Is that correct? Or in my brain, it's like if it's in it down under as well, it's not under the like soil line down under. I don't mean Australia.
Or Australia.
But, you know, that breaks up the dirt. It's not just all, I don't know, compacted.
Yeah, no, that's a good sound effect.
I thought I was doing great. And then I was like, whoop, done.
Ran out of words.
My brain done
it's
now.
It's good radio. So, but you know, it's an audio medium, so we have to have sound effects. Anyway, so there's two sides to it, for sure. I think adding mulch, adding compost, adding some kind of top dressing, I'm never not going to tell someone to do that, right? We are so low in organic matter in our soils that if you add a couple of inches of whatever, right? It could be
mowed leaves.
Yeah, mowed leaves for sure.
My favorite.
Grass clippings if you have.
Never use the bag. I'm just kidding.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't. I don't bag my clippings for sure.
I know people that like their lawns to be clean, they probably do.
Meh. Meh. Anyway, if you're one of those people, meh. I'm John.
We still love you. You're okay.
Yeah, it's fine. Whatever.
The disdain in Vikram's voice.
But no, covering your soil with something is always going to be a good idea. I think some kind of an organic mulch, whether that is bark or straw or spent hay, whatever it is that you have access to. And there's lots of places you can get those things for free. We'll talk about that, I think, a little bit more. But covering the soil is always a good idea. And I think we have to think, even taking a little bit of a step back, you know, living here in Lubbock, especially if you're in a new housing development, like that housing development used to be a cotton field.
Yeah.
Almost 100%.
Which means the soil is depleted.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, cotton uses a lot of the same resources that things like tomatoes and a lot of our garden crops will. And as an old cotton field, probably the last year that it was farmed, it hasn't been amended. It hasn't been fertilized. It hasn't been improved in any way since then. Right. So those soils probably are very depleted.
And then they probably removed most of it anyway.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like when they do a new housing development, the first thing they do is come and scrape all the topsoil off. You know, we have, depending on where you are in town, anywhere from 8 to probably 13 or 14 inches of topsoil. Like we actually have fairly deep, good topsoils here.
Can you explain really quick? I guess there's a topsoil layer. Yes. And then what would be underneath that?
We call that, trying to keep it as like simple as possible, talking about soil science. It's sort of like a sublayer. So there's like 4 to 6 layers of soil, depending on kind of where you are and what you're talking about. The top one is just organic matter. Like that's where like your, you know, if you think about your lawn, like where your grass roots are and things like that, that's your like top horizon. Right below that is your topsoil. And depending on where you are.
Oh, so there's something above topsoil. Yes. I thought that was the top. So because top.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But okay, I guess what I'm trying to tell people out there who may be like me is that there are layers to your soil, just like your skin. Like there's an epidermis and then there's a dermis, right?
Okay. No, and that's actually a great analogy. So you've got your organic matter on the very top. You've got your topsoil below that, which depending on where you are, like if you're in the hill country, that's probably like 2 inches of topsoil. If you're down here, where you're here in Lubbock, again, maybe 8 to 14 inches. Like we've got fairly deep soils. So that's going to be well-drained in general. It's going to have good structure for plants. There's still a lot of roots in that area. So you get organic matter and nutrients and things like that in your topsoil layer. So like that's where the plant wants to grow.
And then what's under that?
Below that, we call that like a B horizon, which that doesn't matter for most people listening. But around here, that's where you're getting into like caliche, which is that like white rock. So if you're digging out here, you'll dig through 6 or 8 inches of soil and then you'll start to hit like these white rocks. And that layer has reduced organic matter, reduced fertility. The structure is not as good for plant growth and roots will get down. They're like plants.
Tree roots.
Yeah. And like prairie grasses will easily grow into that. A lot
I
of
I guess
our
I
things.
Didn't realize that plant roots didn't go much more than say 13 inches if that's all you have of topsoil. Or like I didn't realize in the hill country that there was that little. So does that mean all the plants down there have like super shallow
they do,
roots?
Because they hit rock, they'll hit limestone 2 to 4 inches from the surface in a lot of places.
But limestone, a lot of rock down there. Limestone is softer than caliche, wouldn't it be?
They're similar in some ways. It's more like a lot of our caliche is sort of broken up, so there's spaces in between it.
Okay.
A lot of the limestone down there in the hill country is fairly solid. Like you'll hit solid, like they plant trees with dynamite.
Wow.
In, or in the past they have. They probably don't anymore.
Is that part of, this is new to me, so this is just my brain trying to make connections. Is that just natural? And I mean, I'm guessing, well, of course it's natural, but is the probable reasoning behind that like it's windier up here and plants need more topsoil to have roots to dig in and stay put without getting blown away?
That's maybe part of it. I don't know that it's as like
I'll lineal. Just cut that out.
No, I think it's it's a good question.
You know what I'm saying? Why is there more topsoil here than there? And is there a reason for it like that, like the wind or something?
So that's part of it. We get a lot more like blow sand. Right. So like a lot of our topsoil comes from New Mexico. We get those big sandstorms that come in and it deposits new topsoil. And over years and years and years and years, then like I'm talking about geological time, we've built this deep topsoil. I mean, this is natively a prairie. So you'll have prairie grasses, which are really good at getting their roots through rock.
Yeah. Right? And then it kind of like decays and it's a cycle.
It breaks it up and it builds up that soil. You know, down in that part of the state, you have a lot of trees and not as many there's grasses, right? But just the geology is different. The ecology is different. So you end up with, like, if you look at a soil map of Texas, there's like 120 different types of soil in Texas, mm-hmm. like all over the state.
Yeah.
And so up here where we are, we do have nice, fairly deep topsoils. But depending on where you're on the state, that changes, right? Mm-hmm. And you'll hit rock and you'll hit that next layer faster. And once you get into that next layer, it's like the water holding's not as good, or it sometimes you'll get too much water holding and mm-hmm. it'll just like be like a little lake underground.
Yeah. I guess that would make sense with limestone. Like it doesn't have as many places to seep off. So it just stands.
It can stand. We call that like a perched water table where uh-huh. you don't get as much oxygen. Mm-hmm. You don't have enough nutrients. Your roots struggle to grow through mm-hmm. it some more.
So it's just like a geological history that determines yeah. the amount of topsoil.
Yeah.
Which you're saying depends on the plant matter and possibly what died there, yeah, like a sure. dinosaur or something.
No, I mean, sure. I mean, that's
I don't know. I'm just saying, like, you think there were more dinos like up here than down there?
Probably different kinds. Yeah. You know, we had, you think about the animals that were here, like, we had large herbivores up here,
like the giant sloths and stuff.
That, but even more recently, like, there were
the
mastodons, but even like bison.
Yeah.
You know, think about modern animals that were here. Like, we had large herds of bison and antelope mm-hmm. and all those things as recently as, you know, 150 years ago.
Not think this is where we were going today.
Well, I
but
didn't
my
either.
Brain was like, what? Layers of soil?
But it's actually a good conversation because then you think about, like, you get these herds of bison that run across the plains, mm-hmm. right? The prairies. Their hooves break up the soil. Mm-hmm. So they till it deeper. They work in that plant matter.
Gotcha.
Microorganisms can take it deeper into the soil. Yeah. So it's not, it's the answer is all of it, uh-huh. right? It's all of it. It's nothing exists in a vacuum. So it's,
yeah.
what does the parent material look like? What was the geology? What kinds of rock were here before?
Mm-hmm.
What are the weather patterns like? Like, how much rain do we get? How much wind do we get?
Yeah.
What animals lived here? What plants lived here? So all of that builds the soil.
Yeah.
So we get a nice deep topsoil, but then when they build a new housing development, the mm-hmm. first thing they do is scrape it off till they get down to that base layer because mm-hmm. it's more solid, right? Yeah. So when you put a foundation, topsoil is flexible. It moves. It can sink. It can swell. It can do all these things.
They don't want that.
You don't want that.
Yeah.
Right? You want to put a house on a more uh-huh. solid foundation. So they take the topsoil off. Mm-hmm. They build the foundation. And then sometimes they bring some of the topsoil back.
Yeah.
So, like, if you ever drive by a new housing development and you see, like, the big mountain of dirt,
yeah.
that's all the topsoil that they've scraped off to get to a more solid base layer.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, whereas natively, you may have had 8, 12 inches of, like, soil profile, most housing developments around here probably have more like 4 inches of topsoil before you start getting into caliche when it's a new home.
Wow.
Now, over time, plant roots will get back through there.
Yeah.
You'll improve your soil by adding nutrients and organic matter, and you'll get earthworms and things that can break that up.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to approach like gardening very differently in a newer home than you do in an older home, just because the soil is so different.
Yeah.
So you're going to notice that your plants probably need more fertilizer
mm-hmm.
because there's not as much nutrients available.
Yeah.
You'll notice in a newer home that you have to water more often because you don't have as much soil
mm-hmm.
or healthy, good mm-hmm. soil for your roots to grow in. So you yeah. have a shallower profile, so you have to water more.
Yeah.
So going in and...
That may also be an argument for trying to inexpensively build raised beds.
Sure.
Oh, and, until you can build it up.
Absolutely. And so, like, the things you probably need to think about is, like, what's already in your soil, right? So getting a soil test, we've talked about this before. I think there's still a local lab that does it,
mm-hmm.
But you can send it off. You can, yeah. like, you take a soil sample, send it off, and they'll tell you, like, how much organic matter do you have? Mm-hmm. Is there a lot of salt? What's the pH?
I was curious. I'm glad you brought up the soil test again, because I know we've mentioned it plenty of times before, but, you know, inquiring minds will wonder, is there a way for you to tell without sending it in? Like, maybe you have a pH test from your kid's middle school science class. You know, when you used to do the little...
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh,
the yeah. the you, litmus
You can,
papers?
Actually. Like, you can get some soil, and if specifically for pH, mm-hmm. right? You can get some soil, dissolve it in water,
mm-hmm.
Get it in solution, and then put your test in there. And, yeah, you can get...
Yeah.
Use like distilled water, deionized water, because uh-huh. it's pH neutral.
Okay.
And then it doesn't have a lot of other solids and yeah. stuff in it. Dissolve your soil in it. And yeah, you can use a litmus test and just put it in there.
Huh. That might be something fun for you to do if you have a growing young mind in your house.
Yeah, it is kind of a fun experiment. And you can actually buy at-home soil tests.
Okay.
The accuracy, I don't know.
Sure.
Right? I don't know that I...
But if you... This may just be for someone who has been growing already. Maybe sure. You're not an expert, but you've obviously been spending time and have built up your soil or something. If you're a beginner, you maybe don't want to do that. Yeah. But I think that could maybe be fun. It may not be super accurate. But if someone who's doing it is... What I was going to say is someone who's been... using the same beds or same yard for a few years, they might be aware of what their soil might be lacking.
Right.
And so doing that test themselves, maybe they could garner results from that. Whereas someone who has no idea, yeah, you should probably send it to a lab.
Get a professional. And that's actually a good point, because even the at-home ones, even if they're not like super accurate per se, if you do it more than once, they may be consistent. You may get consistent results. So you can mm-hmm. track changes over time, mm-hmm. right? But if you send it off to a lab, you can get like nitrogen content, phosphorus, potassium, other micronutrients.
Yeah.
You can get all this information, and then they'll make recommendations.
Quest Diagnostics. I'm just kidding. Your blood sample's back.
I mean, sort of for your soil.
Yeah. When your soil has high cholesterol.
Yeah, it should jog more.
You need to lower your LDLs or whatever. Diet. I don't know. The LDL is the good one, right? I don't know.
HDL is the good one. The high density. I don't know.
It's whatever. Y'all know. Yeah. I'm sure the people listening are like, you idiots.
Yeah, no. Yeah. But what's cool about sending away some of these soil tests is that you tell them what you're growing. Like in this bed, I'm trying to grow vegetables, tomatoes or whatever. And they'll look at results and they'll actually give you recommendations on you should add this much nitrogen. You should add this much fertilizer, whatever. Mm. So it gives you a lot of information, and then you amend appropriately,
mm-hmm.
right? Based on what your soil test tells you. There's a joke we tell a lot, and it's because we're not very funny, but like it's like the average homeowner doesn't really know. The average person doesn't really know what they're supposed to do because that information's sort of obscure sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like you go buy two bags of fertilizer, and you put one in the front yard and one in the backyard, and you've applied about five times as
much
as
you need. Yeah, I was going to say, that's way too much.
It's way too much, but there's some truth to that, right? Like a lot of people don't know any better. And where a bag of fertilizer may be supposed to cover 10,000 square feet, there's like, well, I got a bag, I'll just put it out, right?
Mm.
And that's actually fairly common just because I think people don't know any better.
Yeah.
And so I think getting a soil test, following the recommendations, learning how to apply those things, and then every chance you get, add some mulch. Every chance you get, you know, even if it's once a year and you can top dress with some compost or something like that, that's a great option. I tell people, even in their lawns, like if you come in and you can top dress with like a quarter inch of compost, it doesn't even have to be a lot, and just water it in, you know, water it into the canopy, then your soil microorganisms and insects and earthworms and all those things can work it down into the soil. And over a few years, like if you're trying not to use, you know, synthetic fertilizers or whatever, mm-hmm. over a few years, you can really build up a healthy soil.
Yeah.
But I think that's where it starts for being successful in the garden.
And you don't have to do that every year.
No, not necessarily. Yeah.
My yard still seems happy from when I covered it in donkey manure.
Yeah.
And that was in 2020, I think. And it's still...
Well, and if you're not growing stuff super intensively,
mm-hmm.
like if you're growing a few plants here and there, or just general gardening, if you're not like, I'm going to grow the biggest and healthiest mm-hmm. and 500 tomatoes in my yard, you know... Like, you can wait a while.
Oh, my God. That would be so much water.
Doesn't that sound exhausting?
Yeah. Tomatoes are so temperamental.
They are.
It's so annoying. They're like the teenagers of plants. They're just like, ew, you put water on me. How dare you?
Or you forget.
Oh, now I'm thirsty. What's wrong with you?
And then I just go ahead and crack.
You're not my real mom. That's a tomato.
Hanging out by the Coke machines at the mall.
Yeah. I only drink Diet. I'm just sorry, I don't know where that came from. Whereas like an eggplant's like, I'm happy. Oh, you watered me like once this week? Awesome, thank you.
Or like okra will just be like, who are you?
Yeah.
Why are you here? I don't need you.
The different types of children.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be funny. Someone's going to do a TikTok now. Like that like that guy that does the dog breed personalities. Yeah. Someone's going to do that with... I guess people already do that, but I want to see someone acting it out.
Someone is me.
You're welcome.
I'm someone.
I just gave you amazing content ideas.
It's a really funny idea. I think I'm going to do that. But at any rate, like I think making sure that our soil is healthy and as well taken care of and as well maintained and managed as possible
yeah.
is like, if we're talking about the basics of gardening... that's about as basic as you can get. As make sure your soil is as
basic.
Yeah.
Get it? Because the pH scale. Yeah.
And our soils are basic.
Yeah. Like unlike us. So, did you guys learn a lot about soil? Because I think you did. I did. But I want to make a quick point and plug about one of your shows and then quickly run down a bunch of cool weather crops that you might want to do.
Yes, speed round. Lightning round.
But first, what I was going to say is, as you're amending your soil, you might be looking at your yard and thinking like, ooh, what is that? I want to weed that out. I don't know what that is. Like, what's a weed and what's not a weed? And Vikram has a really great episode coming out about with the weed expert guy.
And
he talks about like, what is a weed and why you should leave or not leave something in your growing area.
Exactly. Yeah, his name's Dr. Dotre. He's in our department at Tech.
Is that out already or when does it come out?
That'll come out, I think it's the first episode in March. So it'll be like March 5th or something. Hurry up.
Put it out sooner because I plugged it. But I think it's
coming soon.
Yeah, I think that it's really interesting. Like, I don't think we need to have him here because you can listen to him there. But you should go listen there. We're giving you homework. I'm sorry. I just gave you homework.
I'm not sorry. I'm a professor. I can do that.
Okay. Sure. All right. Now, next week we're going to talk about watering. But today, it's cool weather crops. What you should be planting right now before it gets too hot.
Go now.
Go now.
Turn off the radio and go.
Snow peas. Snow peas would be great.
Snow peas are great.
Peas. Just peas in general. They like it. They like right now. Yeah, they don't like it when it gets hot. But if it's cold, if it snows, whatever, just right now, it's the pea time. Also, turnips, right now, radishes, beets. Not beets. Beets are fall, huh?
Beets are, more warm
but
season.
Turnips and radishes, you could definitely get a crop of those in before it gets too hot.
Greens, a lot of our leafy greens, lettuce, spinach, bok choy.
Cabbage.
Kale, if you have to. you could probably get a decent crop in now. Because, practically speaking, you probably have until mid-May, mid to late May before it's too hot for them.
Yeah, but you want to get them in now so they give you some crops, like that they give you something to eat off of it.
For sure. And I think that's what I'm saying. Like, I think a lot of people are like, it's already February, like it's too late. Go in with them. You've got like 3 months.
Yeah.
And a lot of these crops that we're talking about are pretty quick. Like
they're really fast. Turnips are really fast. And you can harvest the greens as they're growing and eat those. They're delicious.
Yeah.
Delicious. I ate those several times last year. Very good. I do recommend. Radishes came in really fast for me last year in the spring, too. Yeah. You might try that. We talked about last week, wintertime and some other herbs. What are other herbs? Say, go. Ready, go. Bro, go.
Put me on the spot. I don't remember. I don't know any herbs. Wintertime's probably one of the better ones, actually, for right now.
Yeah.
If you wait a little bit longer, things like parsley and cilantro and those you can start going in with.
Mm-hmm.
Sage is actually okay. Like, sage will probably come up and get going pretty quick.
Oh, for sure.
And it's very cold tolerant.
It is.
Like, common sage is very cold tolerant.
Yeah. It definitely. I always talk about my sage plant that's like, keeps living.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Rosemary's super tough.
Yep.
Not all varieties, but a lot of the perennial varieties are very, very tough.
Anything else? Like we said, all the greens, some of your root crops like turnips and radishes.
Those are probably the big ones for right now.
And peas.
Yes.
They love it. And you can get that's some good eats before summer. You're just eating some peas, having some turnip soup and...
Well, and depending on how you're planning to use it, a lot of that freezes real well, especially the greens. You can chop them or blanch them and freeze them and then use them for soups or stews or whatever later.
Yeah.
We haven't talked much about food preservation, but
Not in a while.
And so and then a lot of your root crops, like as long as you can keep them cool and dark and dry, they last quite a while.
How do you cure a turnip? Because, potato, didn't you say you have to leave a potato out for a while and onions?
Onions and garlic you have to,
but I feel like a turnip, has to be some way to cure it, because when I have harvested mine, if I just stick them in the fridge, they get soft real fast.
They get mushy pretty quick. That's a good question. I will look into that.
We'll get back to you later. Next week about how to cure your turnips.
Yeah.
Because they are delicious.
They are.
The greens, you can stew those and cook them like collard greens, and then you can freeze that.
Yeah.
Keep that for a while. Put some brown sugar and some hot sauce in that.
I'm on board.
So good.
Let's do it.
And a little bit of bacon. Woo! I'm hungry now. Yeah. And some cayenne pepper. Woo! So good. That sweet, spicy
I vote yes.
vinegar.
Yes.
100%. Okay, next week we're going to talk about water and what the correct varieties you should be planting for your warm season crops are.
We'll talk about turnips, I guess.
Okay, we love you. Bye.
Bye.